So hello again and welcome to another episode of Quick Question with Soren and Daniel, the podcast where two best friends and comedy writers ask each other questions and give each other answers. I am one half of that podcast, author of How to Fight Presidents, staff writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, creator and host of Obsessive Pop Culture Disorder on YouTube, Daniel O'Brien, joined as always by my co-host, Mr. Soren Bowie. Soren, say hello.
Hello, everybody. I'm Soren Bowie. I'm a writer for American Dad. I also start with a cadence that comes out pretty high and fast, and then eventually it kind of slows down, and the sentences trickle out, and towards the end, the words don't matter as much, and I end with what eventually feels like a period.
Hell yeah, I love that period. You know what? I hardly ever listen to this podcast, but when I do, I can hear myself coming towards the end of a sentence and realizing that I've forgotten how I've started a sentence or where it's supposed to go because I speak in so many tangents and run-ons and parentheticals. And I could just hear, it's like, man, you don't even know where this began.
Wait, what you're describing is exactly why I won't get high anymore. Like, why I won't smoke weed. Because if I do and I start talking to somebody, I'm like, in the middle of me talking, I'm like, uh-oh, what started this? Did I just bring this up out of nowhere? Where am I going?
I can sometimes, I hear it in like, it's bad. I hear it in meetings at work sometimes where I can just, I realize that the only thing I've heard for what feels like 2 minutes is just the sound of my voice and there've been no periods and I don't know how it started or where it's supposed to go. There's just been a lot of sound and I'll wrap things up with like, and anyway, that's just my opinion, so I don't know, like others can disagree.
Yeah, you need that qualifier in there.
I think it's time for me to stop talking and I think we all agree.
But that's just me anyway. I think Ben had something to say. Ben, please.
Anything but silence after that. Man, I've had so many of those in the room where I have an idea. I think it's a funny idea. And then as I'm describing it and looking at the faces of other people, I'm like, they're not buying this. You need to get out of this as quickly as possible. And so I will bail on explaining the rest of the idea and just like let the sentence trickle out and hope that the story or the people just like carry on with the conversation without me. And sometimes they wouldn't. I mean, there were times early on where like I try to explain something, realize that nobody's on board, or, like understands what I'm saying. And so I've tried to just like, well, let's move on without actually saying, well, let's move on. And two things would happen. One, either people would just sit there and I was like, okay, this is rough. No one has been silent this long ever in the history of time. And then the other thing that would happen is somebody would ask me to like, they'd be like, I'm not sure I understand what you're saying. And like asked me to explain it more. And I'm like, I shouldn't have taken the ball in the first place. I can't dribble this thing. I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm passing it to any of you. It was brutal.
It's always one of the other cheap ways that I bail myself out of things. If I don't end with, anyway, that's how I feel. Others can disagree. Is I will, like some dim part of my brain half remember something someone else said. So if like I'm definitely losing the thread, it's like, yeah, so I feel like we could probably tighten up this language, but like broadly I agree with what Soren said earlier. And it's like, aha, I have forced myself onto a team in this room.
Yeah, yes, it's like this,
we are a faction now.
Throwing somebody under the bus with compliments.
Yeah.
I think what you did was good. So we just reiterate what you said.
Yeah.
Oh man, I have no idea what I said because I was in the same boat as you. I didn't know what I was saying. There's a famous story at American Dad where one of the creators, Mike Barker, was in the room, and somebody else was pitching something, or like maybe it was their story that they were breaking, and like he came in with like this like kind of like joke about the pitch itself. Like it wasn't helpful. It wasn't like useful to the story, but it was still like this thing that he thought would get a laugh in the room. And it wasn't getting the laugh that he wanted. Like from the start, it was clear like the energy wasn't right for whatever he was doing. And so he just stopped, took his whole bottle of water and poured it over his entire head. And we saved it. Like it brought the room back.
Thanks to Skillshare for supporting Quick Question. Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. Do something today you couldn't do yesterday with classes designed for real life. Skillshare is an online learning community with so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives. Explore your creativity at skillshare.com/QQ and get a 1 month free trial of premium membership.
Let's thank Honey for sponsoring this episode of Quick Question. Say it. Say thank you. Thank you. These days, it feels like online shopping is the only shopping we really do. That's where Honey comes in. It's the free browser extension that scours the internet for promo codes and automatically applies the best one available at checkout. Go to joinhoney.com/QQ.
Speaking of American Dad, this was going around Twitter the other day. Someone, a fantastic drummer, he filmed himself playing drums under one of Steve Smith's slow jam songs.
Really?
Have you seen this?
No.
It's so good. You should watch it and maybe like show the rest of the staff because it's really cool.
Is it the guy who does drums to songs that don't need drums?
No, it's a different guy. I know who you're talking about. The guy who will do the drums for Jeff Goldblum speaking.
Yes.
Because he has like a very specific rhythmic stuttered way of speaking. And the guy will like score it with drums. Yeah, this is not that guy. This is a guy who like puts beats under things. Ooh. And he's really good.
All right, I'll check that out.
And we'll have Bacon put it in the footnotes so our audience can listen to it too. I mentioned obsessive pop culture disorder at the beginning of this, not to plug that show because I don't make any money from it, but as a pinned reminder that we used to work for a pop culture and comedy website that wrote about things that were happening in the world. And I've been thinking about that lately because I have never been happier that we are not covering that beat anymore. And it's because of the Ted Lasso discourse that is happening on the internet currently. What? And if you're unfamiliar with every bit of what I just said, let me know. Ted Lasso, you know what that is. It's a TV show.
Apple Plus has a TV show about a guy who takes over a UK football team. And he's like a kill him with kindness type of guy.
Yes. It's a show that if you're one of our subscribers on Patreon, then you heard in a bonus exclusive paywalled episode that I had never watched that show because I have like a strange, indefensible relationship to things getting recommended to me by multiple people over and over again. I reach a tipping point where suggestions start to feel like I'm being harassed, and then out of principle, I don't engage with something. And that's how I was for Ted Lasso for a very long time. It was recommended, and I just avoided it. And then last weekend, three things happened. My work went on hiatus, and it was pouring. There was like a horrible storm, a hurricane or a tropical storm, Henri, all weekend on the East Coast. And the third thing was I was dog sitting at my brother and sister-in-law's house, and they have Apple TV. So because of all those things coming together, free time, nowhere to go, and Apple TV, I watched all Ted Lasso that was available to me in one sitting. And it's great. It's a good show. My friends were right. It's not harassment. It's they thought, hey, you'd like this show, and they were correct because they know me, and I appreciate that.
People trying to care about you is like the biggest affront to you.
I know. I feel like therapy is going to sort that all out because
but then you gotta deal with the therapist too. What's her fucking deal? Why is she trying to help you?
Yeah. But anyway, I watched the show and I enjoyed the show, and it's a good sitcom, and the things that I was worried about going into it were that it was going to be too feel good and be like toothless and just like completely devoid of conflict. And it's not that. It's definitely a warm show that rewards kindness, but it's also it's a funny, sharp show. And I watched it just like, this is good. I'm glad I watched this show. I'm going to keep watching it. The Twitter discourse on this show is unlike anything I've ever seen in all of my years of staring at the internet, including the 10 years that we spent being aware of what's going on online.
So I'm partially aware of this discourse.
Okay.
My only point of access for it is this just honestly unhinged tweet where somebody asked who or thought they wanted to know who Ted Lasso would have voted for in 2016. And it was like this unnecessary need to decide what side of the aisle Ted Lasso falls on, this fictional character falls on.
Yeah, in, this Midwestern American.
If he was dropped into our world where
right.
there's a Trump, where there's Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. it's that is just like the tip of the iceberg of this discourse, because it's I'm not exactly sure why it's happening. I think part of it is that season one wasn't released all at once, but a lot of people ended up binging it all at once. So you had this complete 10 episode series that people came to sometime in the pandemic, and they got this completed picture. Like, no one was talking about Ted Lasso week to week. It was a thing that slowly over time, it seemed like everyone had watched. And now that there's a built-in audience for season two, people are consuming it on a week-by-week basis. And there are just like more takes, and there are more thoughts. And there's right out the gate, there are people who are saying season two is not as good as season one. And there are, and you know, that's a defensible take. You can feel that way about anything. Yeah. There are people who, on the positive side of Ted Lasso, are more like rabidly passionate and precious about that show than any show that I've ever seen, in a way that it's sort of like, ugh, there's no, this will get me in hot water probably, but do you know how it was, remember how it was like very difficult to feel like you could engage with someone who was a hardcore Bernie Sanders supporter online?
Yeah, I mean, there's other shows like Rick and Morty is...
Yes, yeah.
Trying to engage with a Rick and Morty fan is rough.
Yeah, that's safer territory, where they love a thing so much that they're completely blind to anything that could be wrong with it. There's a lot of that for Ted Lasso, but it's just because the fan base is so different, it felt even stranger. Like Rick and Morty's fan base is sort of I'm painting with a broad brush. The loudest ones are these exact angry, cynical young males that you expect it to be, who are defending it online. That's not the same fan base for Ted Lasso, but there is that same level of passion for it. It's just people who are so precious about it, they refuse to engage with the idea of there being criticism. And there are, of course, like extremes on all sides of this issue. And they're all so loud at each other, where it's like, hey, I don't think this season is as good as the first season. Other people who are like, it's perfect, get out of here. I'm like, well, that can't be right. And then there have been a lot of takes going around. Like, there was one on Gawker, and there was one somewhere else that was like, flat out, Ted Lasso is not funny. It's a bad show. You're stupid for liking it.
Okay, so yeah.
Yeah.
That's, and like, I recognize that type of pendulum swing.
Yes. We're really getting into like extreme takes on all sides of it. And then one of the ones that really caught fire on Twitter this past week as we record is someone said, addressed to like not to one person, but also everyone. It's like, I'm paraphrasing. I think the reason that you don't like Ted Lasso is because they perform oral sex on women in that show, and they put the woman's sexual needs first. And that's what makes you feel threatened. And just to like credit where credit's due, men go down on women in that show. Like, I don't know, like it does happen. Yeah. And like in season one, Juno Temple's character, Keeley, like instructs someone's like, hey, go down right now, and he does. And then in season two, another character goes down on a woman, and like it's the first thing that happens. And there's a reference to another male character not necessarily going down on someone, but who's just like a very generous and thoughtful lover. And so there's certainly three beats to this point, but it's not something that I like pinned to this show really as what I like about it. Certainly not a thing that I would think is the reason that other people don't like it. And even if I thought that, I would never say it out loud. And as you can imagine, that started a fire, and a lot of people were going back and forth engaging with that argument. And since then, there have now been a number of articles on like every website that I go to, because there aren't really many websites to like consume content on anymore. Yeah. But everyone that I go to has to, in some way,
address
engage with this discourse. Even if they're just saying like, here's why I think people are talking about Ted Lasso right now. Like, go to theringer.com, one of the only sites that exists anymore, and it's how did Ted Lasso become such a lightning rod? And that's, like, even if you're not saying it's good or you're not saying it's bad, you still need to say something because it's the thing that people are talking about on the internet right now.
Yeah, you have to address why it's important to the culture, like why it's mattering to everybody.
Yeah, and that's why I'm so glad that we don't have to do this anymore. Yeah, I don't have to try to come up with a take on this show that's just like, it's a sitcom by Bill Lawrence. It's a sitcom by the guy who made Scrubs. And I'm just like, enjoy the show. Or don't.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a relief. It's like waking up from a dream where you have to, you're in like a, oh shit, I've got a Spanish test. And I got to go to, I can't even find the room. And then you wake up from it and you're like, oh no, you know what? I never have to do that again in my entire life.
Yeah. Everybody was born to create. Whether you last picked up a paintbrush yesterday or in grade school, you can explore your creativity and be inspired. Skillshare is an online learning community that offers membership with meaning. With so much to explore, real projects to create, and the support of fellow creatives, Skillshare empowers you to accomplish real growth. Skillshare is an online learning community. There are a bunch of classes for our listeners, classes on music, creative writing, and web development, really whatever you're looking for. Whether you're a dabbler or pro or hobbyist or a master, you're creative. Discover what you can make with classes for every skill level. Experience real improvement with hands-on projects and classes designed for real life. Skillshare also is incredibly affordable, especially when compared to pricey in-person classes and workshops. An annual subscription is less than 10 bucks a month. Come on! I took a class. I've taken a bunch of classes from Skillshare now throughout the years. The most recent one is called Finding Fulfillment, Using Pivots to Power Your Creative Career with Emma Gannon. It helped me re-examine past sparks of joy to structure and build a roadmap for future goals. This is a real thing I did for a side project I'm working on. This class got me in touch with the things that made me excited about writing years ago when I was just starting out and applied those lessons to my work going forward. Explore your creativity at Skillshare.com/QQ and get 1 month free trial of premium membership. That's 1 month of a premium membership at Skillshare.com/QQ. But that's enough about Apple TV and eating pussy. I want to talk, Soren. I have a question for you.
Go ahead.
It's kind of quick, but I want to make sure. No Googling right now. No searching or anything. I just want your sweet, sexy brain on this. There's a video I watched with over 3 million views about sandwiches. It's the best sandwich in every state. And maybe don't think about it. It's called Best Sandwich, but you don't necessarily need to think about it as Best Sandwich. Think about it as like a representative sandwich. I was very curious about it because I want to see like what's the three places that I've lived, New Jersey, New York, California. What does this person consider our sandwiches to be? And they're pretty much what you expect. New York is bagel, cream cheese, salmon, and variations of that. New Jersey, pork roll and cheese, pork roll, egg and cheese, Taylor ham, that kind of thing. There's like a New Jersey staple. California, I went into it assuming, if there's one ingredient you assumed would be in California sandwich, what would it be?
Avocado.
Absolutely, it's not.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's the California sandwich is an In-N-Out burger.
Well, hold on.
Okay.
Now, first of all, Southern California is the only place that loves In-N-Out. It's like negating all, it's erasure of the entire North Coast.
Sure.
But also, burgers count? Like, I guess bagels count.
I guess so,
burgers count. So now,
burgers count.
So like a Polish sausage hot dog and can be Chicago if it wants to be.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, now I'm understanding the rules a little bit better, but I don't like them as much. But go ahead.
Right, even though this video should know that, like, if you go anywhere else in the country just about, if there's something on the menu called a California blank, it has avocado.
Yeah.
It's the thing that makes it California, according to 49 states.
Yeah.
So now I'm curious, and I'm going to pull up the audio to play it for you after you answer. What do you think your Colorado's favorite son... Mm-hmm. What is the Colorado sandwich? What do you think? New Jersey, pork roll, egg and cheese, Taylor ham. New York, bagel with cream cheese. Yeah. California.
The Denver omelet. let's see. I think that it's going to have some... So the agrarian life in Colorado is like strong. So there's a lot of cows there. There's a lot of cattle and beef raised there. So I would imagine that it's going to be something like a steak sandwich, just like a shaved steak sandwich. I'm trying to think of like what other elements are specific just to Colorado, though. They do. So there's a lot of Navajo culture there as well. And so they do fry bread pretty regularly. So it might be like some sort of like a steak fry bread sandwich with honey.
Steak fry bread sandwich with honey, final answer.
Yes.
Okay. Soren, I'm going to play this now.
A fool's gold loaf is more than 8,000 calories. It consists of a hollowed out loaf of bread filled with peanut butter, grape jelly, and a pound of bacon. It was created by the Colorado Mine Company in Denver and is rumored to have been an Elvis Presley favorite. Legend has it that the king himself flew 2 hours to Denver just to satisfy his craving for the sandwich.
Okay.
I will include the video in the footnotes too so you could see it, because not only does it sound horrible, it's one of the weirdest looking sandwiches.
Well, because I don't understand how you get the bread out of the middle.
It's not a foot long. It's like a yard of bread.
Awesome.
That someone with a blue rubber glove scoops out the bread in the middle and then fills it with peanut butter, fills it with jelly, and puts bacon on it.
And that's the whole thing.
That's the whole thing.
That's not a hard sandwich to reproduce wherever you live, Elvis.
Right.
Like, that part of the story feels like bullshit. I think...
Right, why would you fly to get peanut butter, jelly, and bacon?
Right. And and also...
They don't have that in Nashville, you idiot.
Peanut butter and banana was his jam. Like,
yeah,
that was his big thing. So I think somebody heard that it was peanut butter, and they're like, we need to put this on the map. Let's say somebody famous liked it, and they're like, got it. Let's go with Rutherford B. Hayes. Like, no, can't, no, that's no good. What about Elvis? Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, who's dead? Who can't defend themselves? Okay. Elvis loved this.
And so first of all, that's bullshit. All that it came and like that they tried to connect it to mining, also monstrous bullshit. That's like unconscionable. And also, like, peanut butter is not a staple by any means, any more than it is anywhere else in Colorado. There's so many more things that Colorado is known for. It's like Colorado's known, they have a pizza, and it's like this very specific type of bread on the pizza. And that's where my fry bread element came from. It's like there's Navajo influence in the pizza because the pizza's got this really, really thick, crazy, big, airy crust. And the idea is at the end, you take that crust and you dip it in honey and you eat it. So it's like you're eating towards your dessert. And I thought, okay, that's definitely Colorado. There's a place called Bojo's Pizza that's famous there in a tiny little town called Idaho Springs. And it's since like branched out everywhere, and everyone's decided this is what Colorado pizza is. There's the elements of what you actually have is your export, or like what everyone comes to Colorado for. And like the beef is very, very good in Colorado. I can't believe that none of that shit was accounted for. It's like they never talked to somebody who's actually been in Colorado.
I'm so happy that this is how it turned out, because like, it would have been the most surprising thing in the world to me if you were like, oh, Colorado, oh yeah, yeah, peanut butter, jelly, bacon on like a mile of bread. But like, scoop out the bread and throw it out, I guess. Throw out like the meat of the bread. We don't need that part. Colorado, wasteful state.
Yeah. What I did as a child is I would get my sandwich out of my lunchbox and I would just eat the crust off.
Yeah.
And whatever's in the middle, I'd throw it away.
That made me happy.
Oh, that's infuriating. What?
I didn't jump around to every... I didn't watch every sandwich. I'm really glad I did. I just decided to check out Colorado because I thought... I didn't know what I thought it was going to be. I think I probably thought something beef?
Yes.
Related?
Yeah.
And certainly not in a million years would I have thought this.
Oh, boy. And, okay. I'm glad that you prefaced this with telling me what California's was, because once I understood that this whole premise was bullshit, I could have been even more mad than this. I don't want to be in that state. Not in front of you. Not on here.
Sure.
Okay, so New Jersey. Do you agree with New Jersey's?
I mean, yes and no.
It's like a pork roll?
It's not my... It's not like a go-to sandwich for me or anything like that, but what I do like about it is that it it respects a certain New Jerseyness to it. You know, pork roll leg and cheese is just like woven into the fabric of New Jersey, as far as I'm concerned. And like pork roll is the kind of meat. Some people call it pork roll. Some people call it Taylor ham. We've talked about this on the show before. Taylor ham is the brand name because it was invented by a guy in Trenton whose last name was Taylor. And some people order Taylor ham, egg and cheese, or Taylor ham and cheese, whatever. And some people order pork roll, egg and cheese. And it's like a, you know, one of those New Jersey, what side of the line are you on divides that I just find very tedious. Yeah. But pork roll, egg and cheese is like, not only is it a staple in our diners and our beach towns, it's a loud enough signifier of New Jersey that like there are shirts with pork roll, egg and cheese written on it in like tourist shops and everything. So I understand that it's part of our fabric.
Okay. That makes sense then. I mean, I'm curious what they say for Pennsylvania. If they're going to be, if this is like as unhinged as I think it is, and they're not.
I mean, it's got to be a cheese.
You would think
right?
so. But I guarantee it's going to be something like a soft pretzel from Wawa's or like yeah. some shit like that.
They do zig every once in a while. Again, I haven't watched all of them, but like because Connecticut comes right after Colorado alphabetically in this video and alphabetically elsewhere, I catch that one and they're like, burger. Because, fun fact, the first burger was said to have been invented in Connecticut. I'm like, well, first of all, probably not. And second of all, I'm sure there's some small town in Connecticut that is very excited about that fact, but the rest of the Connecticut probably has another sandwich that they yeah. prefer to be known for.
Yeah, God, I know. I mean, I guess I should...
Unless I'm wrong, Connecticut, sound off in the comments.
I guess I should try bacon with peanut butter and jelly. Is it jelly?
Peanut
is
butter
there jam on it?
Peanut butter and jelly and bacon on a hollowed out football field of bread.
Yeah, just a runway of it.
I
can't imagine that's any good. What a waste. Look, we all shop online. As much as Amazon might be problematic, it's also this great watering hole where you can get just about anything you want or need in your life. And if you don't go to Amazon, you might have your own specific sites that you like to go to. Well, you might be sitting with something in your shopping cart and thinking, yes, but is this the best price? How do I know for sure? Well, Honey is a free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. Honey supports over 30,000 stores online, so you're guaranteed to have it represented somewhere on Honey. And they range from sites that have tech and gaming and products to popular fashion brands and even food delivery. So now, imagine you're shopping on one of your favorite sites. Ticka, 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 ticka. Ah, there's that chandelier you want. Wait a few seconds as Honey searches for coupons it can find for that site. And if it finds them, it'll automatically apply that promo code to your order and save you a bunch of cash. I was recently looking for a new mattress. I want to find a little 5-inch mattress for my daughter. I'm putting a mattress on the floor underneath my son's bunk bed. And I want it on the floor so that she doesn't roll off of it because she's very young. But I also want to transition her as soon as possible out of a crib. And I thought, I need to get a 5-inch mattress. I started looking around for one, found a few that I liked, found one in particular where I was like, this is the one, clicked on it, and then used Honey. And Honey saved me $11.95, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't already have Honey, you could be missing out on free savings. It's literally free and installs in a few seconds. And by getting it, you'll be doing yourself a solid and supporting this podcast. We'd never recommend something that we don't use. Get Honey for free at joinhoney.com/QQ. That's joinhoney.com/QQ.
Do you have any questions for me to get into the show?
Oh, yeah. Let's start the show.
Absolutely.
All right, Dan, a quick question.
Go.
It's actually going to be a two-part question. I want to know who's the person, like you, I guess in this case it'll have to be celebrity. Who's the celebrity that people, so that it, you know, everyone has context. What's the celebrity that people think you most look like? And then who is the celebrity that you think that you most look like? Like if you're going to really objectively think about it and be like, no, this is the person. This is like, you used to get mistaken for this fucker, Sweet James, that was on Billboards
in California.
All over California. Yeah. You can look up Sweet James online. He's a lawyer, I think. He's like, he does one of those lawyers that is just like looking for anybody who's had an accident in like the last 5 years. And there's no resemblance. It's like there's nothing there.
There are a couple of Sweet James billboards, just as a tangent, where they don't even really acknowledge the fact that he's a lawyer.
Yeah.
It's just like a smiling guy in a suit that's like, call Sweet James.
Yeah.
I'm like, fucking why? Or like, go to sweetjames.com or whatever his website is. And I was like curious. So I went to it. I was like, oh, it's a goddamn lawyer. Damn it.
Yeah.
I was tricked. I thought this was going to be like viral marketing for a new Batman or something.
Right. Yeah. I mean, to look at him, this is not Bruce Wayne. And
no,
it's not Dan O'Brien either. I'm so surprised. Like, that's all tweets with people like tagging you and stuff. And people that we knew were like, look at this billboard. I saw, look at this billboard. And like showing you a picture of it. And Sweet James, he does not, he wears glasses. Mm-hmm. And his hair color is the same as yours. And maybe he's wearing a vest in some of them. And that was confusing for people. But he just doesn't look like you.
Yeah.
And so I want to know who is the person that you most get mistaken, or not, I guess not mistaken for, but people like, oh yeah, there's an uncanny resemblance there. And then also who you think you look like.
I used to, it's been a while because both of our looks have changed, but growing up, well into college, people said I looked like Shia LaBeouf, which I never personally saw. But it happened enough that I assumed there was something to it. Obviously now he's got like a big giant crazy person beard, and he's also got like, he's gotten super yoked in his later years, but something about him on Even Stevens as having this big curly hair afro thing, uh-huh. and me having an afro for most of high school, and then separate from that, just like, I guess two curly haired white guys, a lot of people mistook us for each other. It was a fun running joke for me to play when someone would say, you look like that guy from Transformers. And I would say, yes, Optimus Prime. And that was a fun little bit that I did for a while because, you know.
It's a good joke.
We're all done. Yeah, thank you. I was worried it wasn't a good joke because you were silent.
No, I think it's great.
But that hasn't happened in a while, I think, because, again, his look is different. And I've gotten older and my look is different. And the second part of that is the person who I think I look like. Every once in a while, I'll come across a picture of myself, and I think I'm aging into John Hodgman.
Let me look up John Hodgman.
Especially when I have, like, if you only are familiar with him from, like, the Apple commercials or Daily Show, you haven't maybe seen John Hodgman recently where he's done like a prominent mustache and facial hair situation.
Okay.
And I've had some version of a beard or a mustache and facial hair, a loose assemblage of facial hair for the last like 8 or 9 years of my life.
Yeah.
And I'll see pictures of like me with my hair combed to the side a little bit and glasses and a mustache. Like the mustache is the loudest part of my facial hair. And I'm generally not smiling in pictures, and I'll look at a picture of my face, and then I'll look at a picture of him on Instagram, and I'm like, oh yeah, this is sort of, I can see my future. I see where this is going,
yeah.
And that's fine.
So I'm looking at pictures right now, and I see what you're saying. But let me just sit you down on the compliment couch for a second here, Daniel. He's gotten more handsome as he's aged. He, like, looking back at who he was in the Apple commercials, he's just such a schlub. And then I think just fame has been good to him. Like, fame has treated him well, the same way it does with everybody, where, like, somebody has come along in his life and said, no, this is your look. And he said, okay, you're right. This is, like, what plays to my strengths. And he's gotten very, very handsome. But I think you're right. Your facial hair, the way that you guys grow it, it grows in, like, the same patterns.
Yeah. And I think that's probably why people confuse me with Sweet James. People confuse me online with it happens very often that people will tag me on Twitter and say, is this you? And it's never anyone that looks like me, but it is white person with my head shape, glasses, short hair, and whatever my facial hair is doing. Because I think, and I'm not trying to take myself off the compliment couch or anything like that, I think I have like kind of a nothing face. There are very few things that on its own distinguish my face. I have like kind of small eyes. I have a weird crooked nose. And so like just wearing glasses and having facial hair is like just giving myself some horizontal lines so I have like something so people could describe me to the cops if they need to. And I think because I have such a nothing Lego man face, anytime someone sees someone else with a Lego man face but glasses and a beard, they're like, oh my God, twins.
Yes. Yeah, that's part of the reason I'm asking this question, is that I first of all, I get so infuriated when people tell you should never tell anyone who they look like. Like, it's, yes, it's never going to end well. And they're going to be very polite about it and kind, but they're going to fixate on it, and it's not going to feel good to them. I used to get the same thing where, like, anybody who had blonde hair and a jaw, people were like, oh my God, he's your twin. Yeah. I'm like, no, I mean, we look nothing alike. And I get that on Twitter all the time. People would, like, send me pictures from commercials that they saw and stuff. I'm like, are you in a McDonald's commercial? I'm like, no, that's so clearly not me. It's just
that's Chris Hemsworth.
It's just a blonde guy. I wish. Oh boy, to be mistaken for Chris Hemsworth. That's time when you're allowed to do it. If the person doesn't actually look like them and it's just somebody who's gorgeous, you're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
100%. But the one I used to get a lot, and I can't argue with it, Barry Pepper, who is in Saving Private Ryan, Battlefield Earth. He's been a he was in The Green Mile.
Name a third movie. Yeah, Jesus Christ.
he's been in a lot of movies, but he's a somewhat weird looking guy, but we do share a lot of characteristics. But when people would be like Barry Pepper, I would be like, I don't want that to be true.
You didn't think you looked like Barry Pepper?
No, I think he's got kind of like some, he's got more pronounced angles to his face.
Here's a more pointed question that I should have asked. Yeah. Do you not think Barry Pepper is handsome?
No, I don't think Barry Pepper's handsome.
Oh, buddy.
No. And so when people were like, you look like him, I was like, no, you don't mean that. Here's who I do think I look like.
I think he is handsome. I think when they're saying that, they're being complimentary. And like, even if you don't think he's handsome, he's famous for in a job that rewards and basically requires handsomeness.
Yeah, but he's not, sort of. I mean, Paul Giamatti works the same job. Barry Pepper is not the leading man, except in Battlefield Earth. Everyone agrees that was a strange choice. But the person who I do think I look like, and certainly now later in my life, is John Slattery.
Oh.
Does that ring true for you at all?
No.
Oh, let me look at him, though. Okay, this is great.
Oh, you think you look like him, or
I do,
but
think,
do you want to look like
him? Yeah, I think I look like him. I think we've got
And do you want to?
Yeah, I think he's handsome.
Okay, yeah, good.
Yeah, I think that I've grayed a little in my older age, and that he's got a lot of the same angles to his face that I do. He's got kind of like a pinched nose at the end, and his hands. Oh, his hands are just like my hands. We're basically hand twins.
Is this, be honest with me.
Yeah.
Are you being serious?
Yeah. He's got long.
You look at his hands and you're like, those are, it's like looking in a hand mirror.
Yes. Yeah. His build, like there's I'm looking at a couple of pictures of him right now. He's holding, cause he's always holding a cigarette in Mad Men. And so I'd see like these long, delicate ladylike fingers, and I'm like, thank you. Thanks for giving me somebody in pop culture that I can see a reflection of myself in.
That is... I'm really hung up on you looking at his hands. And like, I don't even...
Go try to find some pictures of his hands.
I don't... No, but I mean, like, I can do that, and if I stare at his hands and your hands, I'm sure I could draw a connecting point, but like... I don't even know what my hands look like. I don't think about them enough.
I know your hands. I know them well. Spend a lot of time looking at those bad boys. I don't know what you call those. Like, feet are dogs, but can we? What are hands then? Just cats?
Cats.
I spend a lot of time looking at those cats. They're 10 little tails.
Mm-hmm. There's a picture of John Slattery on the cover of Boston Common where he's wearing a baseball glove and he's got one finger out.
Yeah. It's a long skinny one, isn't it?
And it's a little bit wider than your fingers.
Oh no, that hurts. Yeah, okay. So I've seen him like wearing a pinky ring a lot in that show, and it's like, oh, that's not a hand that should have a pinky ring on it. And maybe that was my connection. I was like, I'm the type of person who shouldn't be wearing a pinky ring. anyway, I think he's a handsome guy. I think that we have some similar angles.
But has anyone ever?
No.
No. No one's ever
said
that. Not
a single person. No. Yeah. So I thought I'd test it out here. But the reason that I bring this up is that as I've gotten older, the caliber of person that I'm mistaken for has just fallen off a cliff.
Yeah.
Like, sure, Barry Pepper and I have aged at the same rate, and we've sort of distanced ourselves in terms of the way that we look a little bit more. But the types of people I'm getting mistaken for are, it's very troubling. So for instance, I was in Minnesota recently, and we were out on this beach, and I was playing with my children, and my in-laws happened to be there, and they were walking along the beach at a distance, I guess. And later that they saw us playing, and then later that afternoon they said, "Looks like you got pretty sunburned out there." And I was like, "What?" And they're like, "We saw you out on the beach and you were looking really sunburned." And I was like, I'm great about sunscreen. And I like showed them my back and like, oh, it must have been somebody else. And then I started thinking back, and like, there was a guy at the beach that day who I noticed was also very sunburned and was just like this very heavy, clumsy dude. And I was like, oh no, they like, that's my body type now. That's who I am. Like, that's who I'm being mistaken for. That's so troubling to me. And sometimes, like, my son will say, "That guy looks like you," and it's never great. It's never somebody who I want to look like. And then other times I've gone to pick up my child at daycare, and I can hear them shout through the window, "Desmond, your dad is here." Now, I saw Desmond's dad, and boy, that is just such a low blow.
Oof.
I've graduated into a new body type, and I actually, graduated feels too nice of a word. I've fallen into a new body type that I guess I got to live with now. And that I look in a mirror and I don't see, but I guess other people do. And that's so eye-opening.
Yeah, it is. I do feel like, and I with complete respect to John Hodgman, I've loved everything he's done. And I agree with you. I do think he's a handsome man. I don't think it's insulting to say that he is older than me and has been forever.
Yeah.
And it's a real blow to go from, "You look like this Disney star, or you look like this leading man in franchise action movies." And then, like, there was nothing in between. It was, "You look like the star of Transformers," and now, "You look like the guy from the Apple commercials." Like, Justin Long? No, man, of course not. Of course you don't. You look like the guy who, if you didn't know, used to be a literary agent. You would assume used to be a literary agent. That's how you look. You had no, like, aging into it. It was like you just woke up one day a literary agent.
I will say that I don't think that you and John Hodgman, well, your faces may be somewhat similar. His is a little bit more rounded because his body's a little bit more rounded. You have a more muscular build than John Hodgman does.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's such delicate territory, but I bring this up only because of the caliber of person I'm currently mistaken for out in the streets and how rough that is.
I feel like almost everyone in my family or my friend circle, especially before they knew you, when they just watched you on videos because they knew me, they thought you were a dead ringer for Aaron Paul.
Yeah, I would get that one a lot too. I think that he and I also have gone in different directions. I think he's gotten more handsome over time, and I think he looks way, like, if I'm being honest, he looks way better. He looks a great looking guy.
He's a great looking guy, yeah.
Yeah. But he does, like, when we would get, watching Breaking Bad, I would see it, because we get red in the same way. We have a similar vein in our forehead when we're upset. The things I didn't like about myself, I would see in Aaron Paul, and that was comforting too.
Yeah.
All right.
I got a quick question for you.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think. Yeah. I want to know what moment or moments radicalized you in comedy. And there's like a hack version of this question that I'm ignoring. The hack version is, when did you realize you were funny, or something like that. And that's everyone asks that. Everyone hates answering that question. This one is specifically like a moment externally, some other comedy that you saw that really spoke to you, and I bring this up because a writer that I follow, Cullen Crawford, who writes on Twitter as Hello Cullen, he's very funny. He's one of the only Twitter followers of mine that like still
just
he comedy. Just tweets jokes. He's just comedy all the time.
He also writes on MODOK. Shout out to that show.
Oh, hell yeah, MODOK.
Yeah.
He tweeted there's a gif from or a clip from The Simpsons, the Sherry Bobbins episode of The Simpsons, where she is like the Mary Poppins stand-in, obviously, and it's the end of the episode. She's floating away on her magical umbrella, and Lisa asks if we'll ever see her again, and Homer is reassuring her, like, I have a feeling we will. I have a feeling we'll see Mary Poppins again, too. Their backs are turned to her as she's floating away on her magical umbrella, and as they're saying this very reassuring thing, she gets swept into the engine of a passing plane and torn to shreds. No one sees it. It happens in the background.
It explodes the engine, yes, too. Like, the engine catches on fire. There's zero chance of survival.
And Cullen shared this and said, when I was a kid, this joke changed my life, like a dancer seeing MJ moonwalk for the first time or something. And that got me thinking about that moment, because I've had several of those that were different from just like, I like making people laugh, and spoke to something deeper and more interesting and like life affirming or changing as far as comedy goes.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you had moments or moments like that.
Yeah, of course.
I figured.
I why don't we alternate? Why don't, because I've got like probably two. I got two that I can really just like off the top of my head that I can think of. All right. Well, you go first then.
The first one is also from The Simpsons. It's in one of the season premieres, Meet the B-Sharps, or it's called Homer's Barbershop Quartet. And it's probably my favorite episode of The Simpsons of all time because it's just like loaded with jokes. But there's something that stuck out to me in the beginning of this episode. They're at a flea market. They're just like, that's the premise in the beginning, is they're going through stuff at this flea market sale. And Principal Skinner sees a helmet, like a prison helmet, and he recalls it from his days being a prisoner somewhere, and puts it on to make sure it still fits, and it still has his prison number on it. And he says, oh, it's got my old number and it still fits. My number, 24601. And it's like the meat of the joke for the widest possible version of this audience is Seymour used to be a prisoner. That's interesting.
Yeah.
He puts on his helmet with glee. That's kind of funny and stupid. And he's happy that it still fits. That's kind of funny and stupid. All of those levels hit for me, but also the specificity of the number 24601, because that is the prison number of Jean Valjean in Les Mis. and this, like, this specific intersection for me as a seventh grader or sixth grader, whenever it was that this came out, was huge. Because, like, it's the joke doesn't hinge on you, on everyone knowing that number. It's for a smaller group of people.
Yeah.
That makes the joke a little bit sweeter. And as someone who, like, loved The Simpsons and also loved musical theater, there's not a lot of things that cater to that very specific interest. There are a few things where I feel like I'm on the inside of anything. And that moment really resonated with me, because I felt like I knew something that other people didn't know. And there's probably some like elitism and gatekeeperism to that, but certainly the way it registered at the time was like, okay, comedy can be specific. Comedy can like target someone and connect with someone in a way that is more meaningful than slipping on a banana peel, even though slipping on a banana peel is undeniably hilarious. This is a thing that was like, oh, you can comedy is allowed to be something that is just funny to you or just funny to a smaller group of people, with the idea of it spreading and becoming something funny to a large group of people, I guess.
Yeah, I disagree with you about the gatekeeping aspect of it. I think that the reason it feels so precious is because it's like the writers wrote a joke that's just for you, like that they handed you this gift through the screen. They're like, hey, I get you. And
it's a way to communicate something more than a joke. It's a way to communicate like, hey, I saw it too.
Yes.
You know, if you want to get like very twee and precious about it, it's a way of letting someone know you're not alone.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. That there are other people that share all of your interests. Like, yeah. Not just you have like, because when you're a kid, you have your friends and you start to sort of figure out that like your friends serve very specific, they satisfy different quadrants of your life. And no, there's not really going to be one that's like crosses every single bound with you. Like there's somebody who's very like into sports with you. And then there's somebody else who's, oh, you know what? We do this thing called the Brain Bowl. And like, we're the math guys. I'm like, this is my buddy for that. But then when you go away to school, you get out of like your small town, you start to realize, oh, there are people that are like that. Like we're just a tracing of each other. This is great.
Yeah.
But yeah, I totally, that feeling when it, you get that out of a show where like somebody on the show is you, or like that it's clear that the writers are traveling the same circles as you.
Yeah.
You're just like, oh, this is so nice. Yeah.
They're saying hi to me.
We have a mutual friend, Ben Joseph. And I'm recalling that he got a chance to write for The Simpsons. And when he did, he put up
a chance like he won a contest. They have one freelance episode a season and he got it because he fucking rules at writing.
Yes.
I don't know why I'm yelling at you like that. I just like Ben a whole lot.
Yeah. He's a great writer. And I think he's been influential in getting both of us our jobs. And, he's a great guy. And he wrote for The Simpsons for a single episode, but he was talking about when The Simpsons, basically this moment that he had where he fell in love with The Simpsons. And it's when, I can't remember the episode, but it's Bart and Homer are stuck out in the woods and they're trying to survive and they're going to eat a rabbit. And like the way that they're going to catch this rabbit is with this snare. So they've bent over a tree and put a rope on the ground for like a cartoon snare.
Yeah.
The rabbit triggers the snare and flings the rabbit up in the tree, but doesn't stop. Like the rabbit just gets flung into the distance. Yeah, like
the rabbit gets catapulted
over the horizon.
Miles and miles. Yeah.
I thought, oh, that's like a really great moment to remember. And I thought about like, do I have anything like that? Do I have a Simpsons moment like that? And I was like, no, I wasn't allowed to watch The Simpsons. but it made me realize that the one for me was a show that I also wasn't allowed to watch, but I would sneak away to watch, which was Kids in the Hall. And
I knew it was going to be Kids in the Hall.
There's a Kids in the Hall sketch called Sausages, which you're probably, you know that one?
Yeah. I'd like to revisit it because it was one that Kids in the Hall was hit and miss for me. And that was one where I remember thinking like, I'm not sure I know what the joke is in this. It seemed like it's a lot of a guy saying sausages over and over again.
Yeah. So the premise of the sketch, first of all, it's shot like a short film. It's very dark. There's a clear color palette to it. It's raining all the time in it. And it's about a man who's taking care of his aging father, we assume. And the aging father is like on the verge of death. And he works in a sausage factory and he steals sausages and brings them home to his dad. But he's also in love with this woman who also works in the factory. And instead of bringing his dad home the sausages, he gives the box to her. It's like, it has all these elements of like, just like a normal story. It's got an arc and a beginning, middle, end. And the Foley in it is not just the Dave, like the actual Foley work in it is incredible. Like it's beautiful. There's a searchlight that's constantly going past the house and it makes its own noise. And like, you always hear the dribbling of the rain. It's really gorgeous. And there aren't a lot of jokes in it. There are some, but there aren't a lot. And, it's very dark as well, like visceral and dark. Like the old man's drooling a lot. You see the sausage sizzling a lot and he's like pouring this gross syrup all over it and then sucking on the sausages. Like it's just experimentation, basically. It's like sketch, experimentation sketch. And I didn't know that you were allowed to do that. You know, there was SNL, which everything felt finished as much as it did back then. Mm-hmm. Like it felt finished and polished and like, oh, here's the game of the sketch. Here's where it has to go. Here's the finale to it. Like, here's the topper. And suddenly there were these guys doing a sketch that wasn't any of that. It was just like, we're going to make something weird and maybe people will like it. And so I didn't realize you were allowed to be dark in a sketch, that you're allowed to add some other elements other than, look, let's find the game. Let's find the game. Here's the game. Let's play it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I was so excited by that as a kid where I was like, you could do whatever you want. And if people don't think it's funny, if they still think it's like compelling, that's enough too. So I guess my answer is that the jokes that radicalized me were the ones that weren't jokes. It was like the anti-comedy. It was the ones where I was like, it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to be set up punchline. You could just, you're allowed to do whatever you want.
Yeah.
And that was so freeing and exciting.
Yeah. My anti-comedy response to that is, or not response, like to negate yours, but to yes, and it is, I couldn't pick a single Conan O'Brien thing, but
yeah,
so much like he and the Simpsons are what taught me comedy essentially. And just like watching late night, when he was hosting it. And I, there's a straight line to trace from, Frankenstein Waste a Minute of Your Time to 90% of the work that I've made.
Yeah.
Like I never stopped laughing at the idea of this is funny because of how much time was spent on it.
Yeah.
And I try to infuse that into most of what I do.
Yeah. And like that somebody does it so earnestly, because there was always like this tongue in cheek element to sketch comedy, or it was just like comedies when we were a kid that were like, yeah, look how funny we're being. And like, there's a real delivery to it and everything that, when somebody does it completely earnest, where it just looks completely earnest,
yeah,
it's like way, way better. It's way funnier. And like that somebody put a ton of, this is like somebody's darling. Like somebody put a bunch of time into this thing.
And there's the commitment. So one Conan thing that I can point to specifically is there's like a famous field piece they did where there was a group of reenactors in, I think, upstate New York, it must have been, where they gather every once in a while and they dress up in period appropriate costumes and play like period appropriate, old timey, for lack of a better phrase, baseball. I don't know exactly like what era this was, but like you can, the costumes are silly and the rules are different and they're using different gloves and baseballs and bats.
Yes,
you know, think of like big curly mustaches, and it's like a hobby that these people do. They play baseball together every a couple of times a year, and they use a different vernacular, and women folk come dressed as women, period appropriate women folk, in like, I don't know, like maid costumes, like not like cleaning maids, but like farm maids.
Yeah,
I guess.
You want to, it's like outfits where you'd expect their name to be Goody.
Yeah, yes, thank you. And so Conan goes there to like, essentially at the start of this thing is going to be, look at this parade of freaks, we're going to make fun of these people doing this thing. But then he sees like this one woman who's very committed to being Goody Proctor or whatever she's going to be. And one of the writers on the show described this moment, because like from once we meet this woman, Conan then dresses himself up in period appropriate stuff and is like a ridiculous, very committed character for the rest of this strange field piece. And one of the writers described it as like, yeah, we were all having fun, we were looking at things, and then Conan met this woman, and then his objective became clear. I'm going to win me this baseball game. I'm going to win me this girl. And he is so pot committed to this idea for the rest of the thing. And I love it so much. I don't know if there are even any jokes in it past this point, but like just the idea that he is going to take very seriously this very silly thing. It's like, yeah, that's going to be comedy for me for the rest of my life is take something very stupid very seriously.
Yeah, it's a really good one. It's Conan. You're right. Conan was like, or I guess he was a little later for me. Like at that point, I was already very into comedy, but because I'm older than you. But Conan is somebody who like every single time would surprise me. I was always amazed by like what you were allowed to do. He and Mr. T went apple picking upstate and to like go see the leaves change, and it's so wonderful. It's like a beautiful sketch. Where, you know, Mr. T talks like Mr. T, and at some point he starts yelling at Conan, and Conan climbs a tree and won't come down. Like gets up in an apple tree and is mad that he keeps yelling at him. And it's just like playing with the reality of the situation is so funny in the moment.
Yeah. I have another
go ahead.
Later in life radicalization moment that will be less fun because no one can like look it up and enjoy it. But there was a writer named Jay Pinkerton who was one of the, as the version of Cracked that we know, he is one of the founders. There was a period of time where he was the managing editor alongside Jack O'Brien's editor-in-chief right before my time. Like our time overlapped by maybe literally 2 weeks before he he left Cracked to go on to Valve. He wrote the video game Portal 2 and worked on Half-Life and has just like been successfully writing comedy for video games and comics at the peak of his talents. And he's completely disappeared from the internet, which seems very healthy and fun. And I don't want anyone to like dig into him or anything, because I don't know if he's chosen to retreat from public life for whatever his reason. So like leave him alone or anything. But I still think of it as a minor tragedy that his website, jpinkerton.com, is gone, because that had such a profound impact on me. It's hard to... So to paint a picture, early 2000s internet comedy was very angry, very male, very ranty. People like Maddox, who made the best page in the universe, and like he's a great writer, who just was like in this very specific character. It was this ranty, over the top, misogynistic, politically incorrect character. There was a lot of like edgelord bullshit that was the only voice that was happening in internet comedy at the time, really. And that was like, you know, who did you have to turn to for internet comedy in the early 2000s other than The Onion? It's Maddox and people trying to do what Maddox was doing, and someone like Tucker Max, who was just doing first person essays about being drunk and hooking up with girls. There were people like that. There were people who were just like entire websites dedicated to mocking obese people and mocking disabled people. Like that was what the state of internet comedy was for a very long time. And young Daniel, who is exposed to all this stuff, like certainly was interested in what Maddox was doing, because I was like, oh yeah, maybe I can write angry rants, since that's what comedy is. I can like pick a thing to be mad at and use like very hyperbolic, over the top language. I want to write comedy, so maybe this is the way to go. And then I found this son of a gun, Jay Pinkerton, who was doing something different. He was like the one person on the internet who was being funny in prose in a way that was a lightning bolt moment for me. And like not even just, he certainly stood out on the internet as a voice that was not misogynistic and not like over the top, I'm playing a character who is angry all the time. Yeah. He was just a very funny writer, writing very funny fiction stories and sometimes nonfiction stories. And it was not only funny for the internet at the time, it was also like, he was probably my first indication that prose could be funny.
Yeah.
In a way that has really stuck with me, because the books that you're exposed to in school, they're funny in like a, even the funniest ones are funny in like a often more cerebral or clever way. And a lot of them you can't even appreciate when you're reading them. Like Catch 22 was the funniest book I read in high school, and it's still a very funny book. But, you know, the standards for what a funny book are just very different. And
you would never laugh out loud at a book you're reading in school.
And like even Shakespeare is someone that I've come to understand is like hilarious and very clever. But at the time, you're a 15-year-old kid reading Shakespeare, and the best you can say, it's like it's not gut busting in the language of its time to a high school student. Like they're like, and very often it's just a teacher who is explaining to you, you know that line right there? He's talking about dicks. It's a dick joke. Shakespeare made a dick joke. And then even at 15, I'm like, oh, okay. All right. It's not as funny as when my buddy makes a dick joke, but I understand that Shakespeare is doing it. So I didn't have it in my head that books could be funny, really, in the way that like The Simpsons was funny, where I'm just laughing at it. And then I read Jay Pinkerton, who's got the funniest prose of anyone I've ever read in my entire life. And I've since then, like, John Swartzwelder does that. Jack Handy's novel, The Scent of Honolulu, does that. But it's still, Christopher Moore does it. But it's still like, he was the first one I saw that it seemed like was allowed to treat books as, or treat prose as like, first and foremost, this sentence is going to be funny. And then the next sentence is going to be funnier. And then the next sentence is going to be funnier. And that's why I'm writing this. And like that kind of A, the idea of essays being funny and like the purpose of an essay being hoping to accomplish the same thing that a stand-up comedy routine does. That was novel to me, and that was very exciting to me as someone who never envisioned a path for myself involving stand-up. But like suddenly funny prose was like, oh my God, this is a thing that I can do. This is the path that I'm hoping to take. That was nothing short of life-changing. And all this is to say, it's a bummer that...
it's all gone now.
It's all gone, yeah.
That is a bummer. I did read some Jay Pinkerton. I really enjoyed him as well. I had that sort of similar moment with Neil Pollack when I read his Anthology of American Literature, which is just a collection of his stories.
Yeah.
And realizing, oh, shit, you're allowed to do this. Okay, I get it.
And there's a line past there, because when I started writing for Cracked, I was definitely doing an impression of Jay Pinkerton, because everyone starts out doing an impression of someone else.
Yeah.
And someone in the comments was calling me out on it. And I'm not going to defend myself on that. I'm just going to let this person say I'm doing a Jay Pinkerton ripoff. And then Jay, because he's also a separate from being a comedy genius, is a very kind man, emailed me and he was like, don't listen to this person. You're doing what you're doing. And I like it and it's great. And they're saying you're ripping me off. I don't think that's true. And anyway, I'm only ripping off Neil Pollack, so it's whatever.
Oh, did he say that?
Yes.
Oh, man. That's great. Cool. Well, there's one other one that I want to talk about, Dan, that I'll just do it quickly, that made me realize that you don't have to rush through a sketch too, that it can be like a slow burn, and sometimes that's way, way better. Does the name Brocktoon mean anything to you?
No.
Okay. There was a sketch on Saturday Night Live in like 1993 or something like that. Tom Hanks was hosting, and is one of the later sketches, like the B-sides. And it was a sketch where... It was a Mr. Belvedere fan club sketch. Have you ever seen this?
I bet my memory will be jogged if you say a few more words.
Okay. This is in the age of like Adam Sandler, Mike Myers, Phil Hartman. They're all in it. Tim Meadows. Mm-hmm. And it's a fan club for Mr. Belvedere. And it's clear that like these people are just... unhinged, like they're on the verge of maybe trying to kill Mr. Belvedere, and Tom Hanks is the one who's like doing the minutes and everything and running the meeting, and he's just barely holding them back because like there's a little bit of it in him as well, and it starts off and it's just like you have no idea where this is going, and you're starting in such a weird context anyway that there's this fan club for Mr. Belvedere, but then it gets so much weirder, and there's like, they're like trying to decide, like, show if we ever see each other out in public, how can we talk about Mr. Belvedere without actually saying his name? And like, they spend a lot of real estate on figuring out what to call him. And then finally, Kevin Nealon's like, how about Brocktoon? And everyone's like, yeah, that's nice. And then
that's certainly a sketch that's right up my alley as far as like hitting the sweet spot of comedy things that I love, where we're A, it's a waste of time. B, taking for granted an agreed upon absurd assumption.
Yes, yeah, of course. And it I guess I don't really want to ruin it for you now, but it's like it builds to a point where they're like where Phil Hartman, like the best part of the sketch for me is Phil Hartman talking about, they're saying things that are acceptable and aren't acceptable, and they're like, I should want to shake Mr. Belvedere's hand. I shouldn't want to cut the flesh. To wear the flesh, to let his flesh open doors to new worlds for me, like that kind of stuff. And and the deliveries in it are all really funny, and like people are all like coming with these like very built characters, and it's so fucking funny. And it takes forever to get there, and like the payoff is worth it. And I'm like, it's like waiting for the beat to drop, basically. And I didn't understand that you could do that either. Like when I saw that, I was like, oh my God, it took, like, this is, the payoff is worth it. Like, if you know you have a good payoff, then take as long as you want, and it just only adds to the laughter.
Well, that's some good fun that we've had today. Do you have anything else to say, or should we wrap up this show?
No, we should wrap it up. We did a nice long one for people today.
It sucks. I mean, it's the only reason it sucks is that, like, this doesn't, the minutes don't roll over. We're not going to get enough extra minutes that like we don't have to do an episode 1 week.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so nice if we could just cut at an hour, no matter what, and whatever was left over, we threw it all together in another episode. That's worth trying.
Yeah. I'm going to track down. I don't need to track it down. I have it right in front of me. You can find me on Twitter at DLB_INC or Soren at Soren_LTD or our business daddy at MakeMeBaconPLS. You can email the show at QQWithSorenAndDaniel@gmail.com. You can find, hire our engineer, producer, editor, Gabe at GabeHarder.com. We also have a Patreon. If you go to the Patreon and you donate money, I think we only have one tier at this point. It's just like the $5 tier. If you feel like doing that, you get once a month a bonus episode where we answer questions from you, exclusively the patrons who support us. But if you don't, that's fine. You'll still get the weekly free episodes. I'm also, if you go on my Twitter, I'll be putting links from time to time about running a race and raising money to fight cancer. So if you have a couple bucks to throw at cancer, you could donate there.
Didn't realize cancer was sponsoring our podcast.
Yeah.
You know what I'm actually going to do is, as soon as this episode comes out, I will go on Twitter and put up the sketches and Conan sets that we're talking about.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
I will.
All right. Bye.
Bye.